It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian, from the, Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
This is Kevin Balmer from the Merp UK Group.
And you're listening to the 195th episode of Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games in the MMO cryptic Neverwinter. Today, we are joined by awesome module developer in Neverwinter Nights 2, Merp UK. Thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you and yet another Tolkien-inspired developer in Neverwinter Nights 2.
Yeah.
Yep. And get started. Can you give us a little bit of background about how you got into Neverwinter Nights 2 and how you got started on your module series, The Untold Tales of Tolkien?
Sure. It kind of started really with Neverwinter Nights 1. I probably started using that about a year after release. I think I spotted my younger brother playing around on Middle Earth based servers and things. I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, that's what's going on. I mean, he was more of a player, but I mean, I've always been into making things really, you know, for kind of other people to enjoy. So, yeah, I played around the tool sets and, you know, we slapped together a very cheap sort of Middle Earth. It wasn't really a persistent world, but it was a multiplayer server. And that got more and more involved and, you know, bigger interest to me. So it built up and then we started creating a... it was in the end of Persistent World, which we made two versions of, and that was called Untold Tales of Tolkien. We had quite a big team of that as well. And that ran for about 7 years in total on Neverwinter 1.
Smokes.
Yeah. To be honest, too long. I think 5 years, I think, because by then I think the players were starting to, you know, vanish a bit then. I think it was harder to keep that player base there, and the amount of time and energy, it wasn't really worth continuing with. So I wanted to do other things as well. I was very interested in single player or single party experiences, like, you know, really, and had opened up Neverwinter 2 and thought, yeah, I'd like to try it. I mean, I tried it in the past and I wasn't that impressed. Yeah, so yeah, I opened up Neverwinter 2. It'd already, you know, been out for quite a few years. I had tried it earlier on, and there were some issues with the game that I wasn't particularly happy to work with. But I mean, over the years, they seem to have been lessened somewhat by you know, contributions and the patches as well. I think the final patch cleared a few problems up and whatnot. But I mean, there's still things there that annoy me about it. I mean, the cameras are not my best friend. You know, playing, it's I don't always enjoy that, but anyway, I mean, we I ended up just sitting down with a good friend, Sophie, and we were just talking about things we know we'd like to make, you know, modding wise. You know, I talked about some of the stuff I'd done before. What we did, we went back to Neverwinter Nights 1, and we thought we'd like to make something set in Middle Earth, but something that's a bit different to everything else out there. Everything else was kind of Lord of the Rings, Hobbit centric, you know, it was connected to the storyline somehow, or it was going on while that was happening. We thought we'd like to make like maybe a new story of our own within the universe, you know, obeying the books as best we can, and just create something a bit new, but, you know, mainly a story about your character. So we didn't want them to be like a, you know, they take control of a big superhero or anything like that. We wanted to start off a little unknown person who has their own little adventure. I mean, a bit like, you know, you say Bilbo Baggins or Frodo Baggins might have had it in the books, but we wanted to do it, you know, make our own characters into it. And we just thought we'd make a little mod, really, just something small, a little kick around. And as these things go, it turns into something a lot more. We kept adding little bits on. Really, that's where it's gone. We released the first one on Neverwinter 1, and it did surprisingly well. We didn't think, you know, I remember saying I'd be happy with 20 downloads. I remember saying, and I think it hit something like 200 in a couple of weeks or something like that. And then that just rolled up and up and up. And I think it sits around about, it's been out for nearly 2 years now, and it's probably sitting, you know, in the thousands somewhere, I suppose. So it's, you know, it did well. And considering we were, technical knowledge wise, we weren't particularly strong. There's a lot of very crude implementations in there of things that if I was sitting doing it now, I'd done very differently. But it yeah, it worked. People enjoyed it, and yeah, that was the goal. You know, is we make modules people would want to play, what we would like to play rather. And yeah, it worked out. So what we did, we opened up Neverwinter Nights 2, and we remade that first module, the Indrathreen Prince, into Neverwinter 2. And with all the technical expertise we'd gathered, we did a much better job, I thought. But again, there was some crude implementations in there, but it's more polished, much more polished. And again, that one, it just did even better than the first one. It's we've over 1,000 downloads now, and it's been up since November. So
wow, I mean, that's a heck of an accomplishment there. I mean,
that's what spurs us to keep going. I mean, I've always said that whether we continue or not is dependent on, one, our enjoyment, and two, if people enjoy it in turn. I mean, if one of those is eliminated, then we stop. But no need for that right now.
Yeah, well, I think that's a big part of anything that you're doing.
Yeah,
community based. If you're not enjoying doing it, it's probably going to reflect in what you're doing. Number two, it's just going to kill it for you, man. It's the whole idea that you got started was you're enjoying it. So, can you give a little bit of the background story of your module series and how and if it relates to the Hobbit Lord of the Rings story at all?
I get asked this quite a lot, and my answer usually is they are related to both of those stories, but they're not directly related. So you're not going to get caught up in the quest for the ring. You're not going to get caught up in Smaug burning down Esgaroth or anything like that. You won't get caught up in anything like that, because one, either it's already happened, or two, what we've purposefully avoided sequences from the books, or if we do touch on any of them, we will reference it rather than actually stick the player right in. So, I mean, put it into context, our story takes place, for those Middle Earth bods out there, we take place about 75 to 80 years after The Hobbit, which is about 5 years before the events of Lord of the Rings. So it's nearby. A lot's going on in the world at that time, which Tolkien didn't write about. So that allows us to have a bit of creative license to suggest what may have happened instead. That's kind of why we go the name Untold Tales, because it is kind of, we like to think that there's the bits that were left out in our minds anyway. So background-wise, player character will be starting off, as I said before, quite, generally an unknown, is working or assisting a scholar of relatively unknown except in the local area. The whole campaign is set in Rivanian, which is sort of it's the northeastern side of Middle Earth, bordering the eastern lands. You've got the dwarves to the north, you've got the elves to the west, so it was a good multiracial sort of region, a lot of opportunity for different races to play a part. And over this time, something happens to this character. They lose their home actively, and this is all due to the Easterlings, who are sort of preparing to invade Rivanian, which obviously occurs in the books while everything's going on during the Lord of the Rings in Gondor, Mordor sort of region, and other parts of the West as well. The Easterlings will invade Rivanian. Obviously, they will attack Dale and try and wipe out the dwarves as well. Over time, the player will get caught up in this. So it's a great big sort of conflict that's going on over three campaigns we're planning to make. And it will escalate. The years will advance until we come to pretty much we will meet up with Lord of the Rings timeline, but we will go past it slightly as well. So the whole series will culminate in the Battle of Dale. If anyone who's read the books, they probably already know what will happen. We're not going to be changing any facts from the books in terms of the outcomes, things like that. But what we'll be interested by is the outcome for the character themselves. So it's a big journey, really. We've added lots of extra side sections in as well. But the main quest is generally around the threat to the kingdom and the character's involvement in that, and reflecting certain outcomes and things.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, that makes total sense. I mean, you're right. You don't want to get involved in changing the lore of the actual books and everything like that. But you also have a very crafty way of basically giving yourself a really good platform to build a campaign on. Like you said, it's not like the books and the storyline, the main stuff is everything that ever happened during those timelines. I mean, you figure you have a whole world.
Yeah.
Things go on, you know. There's and especially in a time of upheaval that you're talking about, for those who are familiar with the story of Middle Earth, you know, and being able to go through that and understand that, hey, there was a lot of stuff going on there that the books and the movies barely touched, just scratched the surface on far as the story. So
yeah, I mean, another decision, it was that obviously the Lord of the Rings story, and that has been done to death, really, in my opinion. It's I've seen lots of mainly, you know, persistent worlds. I mean, certainly Neverwinter Nights one. There was a lot of persistent worlds, varying quality, but they all generally revolved around the same thing. It was all connected to the Lord of the Rings, and it seemed to always be set around that sort of time frame. So I just wanted to, that was the first thing, it had to be something different. And, you know, I read up, did a lot of checking, and I thought, well, here's a section of the world which it features a lot in The Hobbit, but around the Lord of the Rings time, there's only real little mentions of what's going on there. And, you know, again, the Easterlings, very vague sort of antagonist. So that again, we were able to create a few things of our own, really, with that. You know, we could go be adventurous with it. I mean, part of the current campaign we're working on, the second part, is that is part of that game is actually set in the East. And obviously, no one really sets foot there in any detail in the book. So we were able to really go to town on how we'd think it would look, what we thought people would look like, how they behave, sort of customs, things they do as well. So yeah, we're hoping people really like what we've done with that, because we went a bit wild with some of that. So yeah,
that's really cool. I mean, the fact that you put that much time and background effort into it, I mean, that's going to certainly reflect the overall immersion factor of your module and everything. That's awesome. Yeah, as far as what you think, like from your ideas, what do you think about the type of module that you build? I mean, do you think that's more like a single player role play or action hybrid? What's your personal feelings on that?
For me, I would say it's a single player sort of action adventure, I suppose. But it is heavily driven by a story, which sort of its control over the game can relax and tighten at certain points. I mean, the Indrathreen Prince, so that's our first campaign of the series. That was a particularly story-driven adventure. Plenty of action in them, but I always like to think the action is timed well. It's always there for a reason. I don't like just shoving, you know, hordes of enemies just for the sake of, you know, XP gathering or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
If there's going to be action, there's action for a reason. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the story, the first campaign was a very personal story, that chapter. It sets the character up. I called it the makings of this hero, what made them into that. Rather than you starting off, you're a hero from day one, we wanted to build it up gradually over time. And it's pretty much like that. I mean, there's a section in that campaign where you do have a lot of freedom at one point to pursue things as you wish. In the current one we're making, again, it will always be sort of a action adventure game. But the second campaign, I would say, kicks off again quite personal, because without spoiling the ending of Prince mods to people, your character starts in a rather compromised position and has to be quite resourceful to get out of that situation. So that obviously requires me to be quite tight and in places with how that goes ahead. But the middle of the campaign, you'll be coming to the city of Dale. And that's intended to be a very open world style experience. We'll be using a world map in that. So the player can very much carry things out at will. There will be a main structure in there, which obviously needs to be, you know, that needs to be followed. But there'll be a lot of side pieces to go along. So that, you know, adds to the, you know, in a way, a bit of a role playing. You know, there's plenty of role playing available there. You can choose what you want to do. So, yeah, it is an action adventure, you know, guided by story. So the story is very important to it all, obviously. It's the main thing behind it.
Yeah, definitely story is when you're discussing what you're doing, the type of module you're doing, that's going to be a big part of it. And honestly, that's what's really going to drive them downloads too, because people, you know, when you're playing stuff, typically it's about the story. I mean, if you want to download a module just to kill stuff, I mean, you can probably fire up the tool set and throw
10 a penny. So
yeah. No, I love that. And I love the fact that you're working the world map into it and, you know, having that travel back and forth and openness feeling, you know, open feeling to the game itself. You had mentioned before that you had a team with your Neverwinter Nights 1. Do you have any of those members or do you know how many people?
No, it's just me.
Oh, okay.
I think over the years of, I mean, like I said, I felt that the Persistent World was probably running a bit too long. Like I said, it probably should have been stopped after 5 years, because after about 5 years, that's when the team started to thin out. A lot of the original or first people to join in were moving on with their lives, you know, but we all started off generally much younger. Obviously, you know, people have families and, you know, work commitments, they move,
sure.
You know, and you know, life goes on, doesn't it? You know, a good thing can't last forever. Be nice if it did. And yeah, I mean, some really talented people on there. I mean, Dave Oliver, he did a lot of really excellent interior work on the Persistent Worlds. But he does still work with us. He did the logo artwork for Indon 3 and Prince. So he's a bit of a master with taking in-game screenshots and manipulating them into what we want them to look like. So he's still contributing. I believe he's going to be working on the logo piece for our upcoming campaign as well. So other than that, the others, they tend to stay in touch. We have a couple on the MERP UK Facebook group. So yeah, I mean, they've all moved on, really. They're all doing other things now. But, you know, like I said, it can't last forever. But there were really good times, though. I mean, at one point, we had about 8 people contributing. And we really were able to put out good quality content, you know, at reasonable pace as well. Because I mean, that's always the thing with Persistent Worlds. If, you know, players always want more.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Always want more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're never quite done when you're, like, you talk about Persistent Worlds, and we hear that, you know, from other Persistent Worlds that we've interviewed. And, you know, it's a continual process. And if you don't have the, I don't know, if you're not continuously rolling the staff, it's going to eventually get to the point where, you know, like you said, like, you know, it's just you working on it or whatever. And then and at some point, the fun factor gets going from, you know, this is great. And all of a sudden you're like, man, I got to do this now. And after a while, it gets to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point I got to with the Persistent World, really. It was, you know, people, players, and developers were moving on. And I just got to the point where I just felt, you know, I really don't want to be doing this anymore. You know, the gain for me, for the effort I put in, is, you know, it's now in a negative, really. So
right.
It was just time to call it a day and move on to something new. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, looking back now, I'm glad I did. Because I'm getting, you know, as much enjoyment as I was during the sort of the golden days of the Persistent World. So
Well, that is a big part of it. I mean, at some point, whenever you do realize, hey, you know, I got to stop doing this because, you know, it's basically a time drain and the energy drain. You're right. You made the right decision. No question about it. As far as talked about, you know, the staff and everything like that, we talked about, you know, downloads, but in general, like the feedback, how has your module been received by the community? Do you have any upcoming releases in progress planned?
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of the feedback, if I start with the, because I feel, you know, it's relevant, the Neverwinter 1 version of Indon 3 and Prince. Yeah, I mean, that surprised us. I mean, I said before, I think, you know, 20 downloads was my, you know, that was my happy medium, just to think this little experiment has at least made 20 people happy. and you know, like I said, 200 downloads within a fortnight or so. And yeah, we were jumping up and down. It's myself and Sophie who helps me put all this together. She does a lot of interior work. And yeah, we just couldn't contain ourselves. We were like, 200, you know, is this right? We thought like mailing the admin and actually saying, is your counter correct?
Yeah.
So is it working? So, you know, immediately when we saw that, we were sitting down talking about, right, let's write this next piece. What's the plan for this piece? So obviously we did the conversion, Neverwinter 2, and it was twice as fast, pretty much, from downloads. It just blew the old one away. We had people following it, you know, on Facebook. So when's it being released? You know, when's it going to be out? Where can I download it from? What races are you? You know, and we're getting a lot of questions. So the feedback's it's been way beyond what we thought it would be. So gives us a lot of motivation. As for next releases, well, we're currently working on part 2 of the Plan 3. This time around, it is going to be an actual campaign. I mean, Interim Theme Prince was actually just a module, but it was too large, really. In hindsight, I'd have turned it into a campaign. But at the time, I was a bit ignorant of that feature. So this time around, we're building up a campaign this time. It's probably four or five modules in it, and it's probably bigger than the Interim Theme Prince. I mean, at the time of designing it all and thinking how it's going to work, it was... we thought it'd be something similar in size, but it actually seems to be rather large. we've quite, you know, lofty plans for it, but yeah, it's due out. Well, I did earlier say about August, but it's probably gonna be later than that now, I think. Thinking I don't have as much free time as I did when I was making prints, but you know, on a day off, I can knock out 7 or 8 hours without any problem. I mean, most days I'm probably only doing about 2 or 3 hours.
That's pretty much a good amount of time to put in today.
Yeah, with me though, I'm always conscious of time, always thinking, oh, I need to be doing more. But I mean, you can only give what you have available. But I mean, I know it will be out this year. That's something I definitely want to happen. And yeah, we're hoping it will go down even better than Prince did. I mean, we've come a long way in terms of knowledge, you know, skill sets, really. You know, we can do a lot more than we did in Prince. So hopefully what people will see is more of the story, more continuation of what was going on before, but hopefully a lot more polish and general clever, nice touches added that we wouldn't have known how to make before.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, I looking at what you know, all the stuff that you're talking about, I mean, it's just such a success, and it's refreshing to hear that, you know, you took your vision from Neverwinter Nights 1, moved it to Neverwinter Nights 2, continued it on all these years later, and you're still, I mean, I don't know, it's just, to me, that's just awesome to hear that you've had such success doing that.
Yeah, it felt like a bit of a roll of the dice, really, because, I mean, the other option was to just sort of pack up and move on, really. But I always felt when I was working on the Persistent World, obviously, you know, you have to make your quests and things repeatable, and you obviously have to take that into account when you know, you're thinking, right, you know, if one player's here, another's here, you know, I didn't always like having to worry about that. So I couldn't really design the sort of quests and activities that I really wanted to. I always liked very personal stories, and it's not really always easy to do on a Persistent World because everyone's got to do it.
Right.
So there were times where I was working at thinking, I know, I'd really like to make this differently. So in a way, I always saw it as an opportunity to create a spin-off, really, of, you know, single-player modules. I even, like, tried my hand at doing it on Neverwinter 1, but never really got far. But, yeah, I mean, this seemed a natural way to take it. But so I knew it would either go really well or really badly.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in a really good place right now.
You kind of led into this one, but what have been some of your best times working on The Untold Tales? Your best feelings and thought about it?
Definitely the best time, I mean, I could probably give you three best moments, I suppose, the highlights. I think when we converted Interim Theme Prince over to Neverwinter Nights 2, and we had all that experience from making the first Neverwinter 1 version, we had a lot more confidence going into it because, one, the Neverwinter 1 version was out. We knew people, you know, liked it. We knew a lot more than we did. So we sat down, we thought, right, these are the bits we're going to change and improve. And we just sat down, we just did it. You know, we didn't have to scratch heads over it or anything like that. It was felt quite easy to do, really. It was just good just seeing, you know, your characters looking a bit more... less pixelated, you know, the area's looking even nicer with the Neverwinter 2 engine. So that was a good feeling that, you know, making it, knowing people are going to like this because they've already played the first version. You know, we can only do better than we did last time. We couldn't go backwards. So that was a good feeling when we converted it out and released it. And yeah, it just, you know, the downloads flew, you know, and the feedback, everyone's saying, oh, you know, we want part two. And, yeah, so that was... That was a good one, but you know, I'd say you have to wait a year. You know, sorry. Mm-hmm. Another one. There was a video series actually recently. I don't know if you've seen them. Some Let's Plays. A chap called R. Travesty.
Yeah, I have actually.
Yeah, he does various videos of short and long modules. And yeah, I was just browsing one day, and yeah, I was looking on YouTube, and I occasionally put little videos up of footage, and I just noticed that he was doing Let's Plays of Interim Theme Prince on there, and I think he must have been 14 episodes in or something that I'd missed. So I sat down for 7 hours watching all these. I only meant to watch one and come back later, but I ended up sitting through the whole lot, and it was brilliant. You know, it's like someone's actually playing, you know, and commenting. And I mean, in the end, what we did for one of our updates is we got all 40 of his videos, sat down, watched them all, took notes, and it was actually really useful way of getting some feedback on it, because the way he doesn't just sit, stand there, you know, hacking things to pieces and just, you know, making small talk. He gives a lot of feedback on what he's thinking and feeling while he's playing it. So that was really useful to us, and we actually got a few ideas from it, really. I mean, some of his reactions really, you know, made us laugh sometimes. You know, we thought, all right, so we've actually achieved something here that we weren't even going for, but you know, we didn't realize it was possible to scare people as well. So we actually scared him at one point, so that was quite interesting. So we're going to try and do a bit more of that. But no, I mean, that's something I'd recommend to any more news modding at the moment, is if he's, you know, I mean, ask him, even offer your module to him, and if he's not aware of it, he might play it. And it's a really good source of feedback, really, because you have recorded footage of a player playing your game. I can't think of any better way, really, other than, you know, live testing and things like that. And the only thing really was just the programming side of it with scripts. I mean, with Indomitian Prints on Neverwinter 1, I knew next to nothing about scripting. I relied on Lilac Soul to do it for me. with occasional edits. I mean, when I say earlier, the crudity of some of it, it was, I mean, obviously Lilac Soul is a fantastic tool for if you're doing repetitive scripts, or if you're a novice or whatever, it can put you on the right path to do something. But a lot of it, you know, I couldn't really do anything particularly advanced. Either the scripts, you know, editor wouldn't allow me to do it, or I'd end up with a very big sort of clunky script. So it was, you know, hogging, you know, the engine up. But yeah, I mean, again, just throughout making Neverwinter 2 Prince version, one day I was just sitting there on the script editor, just trying to write something and failing. And all of a sudden it just clicked. I just suddenly understood what, you know, how, I think it was to do with like the syntax and the way, you know, things are expressed in the editor. I mean, it took me ages to get my head around it. I think I'm just a bit of a slow learner with certain things. But it just clicked, and within 2 weeks I was writing exactly what I wanted. So, I mean, I've always had a head for, you know, the general gist of things, but it's always actually expressing them. I'm not sure how you describe that sort of problem, but yeah.
Oh, I know what you mean. Hmm?
It took me years to get my head around, you know, just I knew what I wanted roughly with the functions I needed, but I just had problems getting them down. But I mean, now I've created my own crafting system recently as well, and that's
holy,
you know,
smokes.
Very very proud of that. And it just came, and I found it's a bit like working with Lego. You know, you write something simple, or you build something simple, and then you look at it, and then you say, right, I'm going to add this piece on, and you add another little piece. And that's how I learned, really. I just sort of mucked around, and eventually I can just about get it to do what I want to do at the moment. So, you know, so that was a big step forward, because that just changed the whole level of, you know, detail in the mods. So right now, it's like I said, it's great now. You know, if I want a particular thing to happen, I can make it happen now. Or before, I had to resort to, you know, second measures, you know, plan B, which is usually, you know, looks a bit, you know, tacky. But it's you know, there's a bit of gloss to it now, which is really important. I mean, that was we did an update package for the Neverwinter 2 Prince a couple months back, and that had a lot of polish and changes to it, which wouldn't have happened if I, you know, if I was still scratching my head.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you definitely came a long way. There's doubt about that. Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, I did. Also, I mean, I think you could see that. When you get involved in what a project like this, it's not going to, like, you have the vision in your head, but with the determination, you're going to get to that point. You know, you're going to be able to, just how you get there. It may not look the same way you thought originally it was going to, but hey, you know, gets there close enough. Totally. Here's a question for you. I asked this of all the folks we have on from the Neverwinter Nights 2 community. What do you think the future for Neverwinter Nights 2 is at this
point? I mean, I think it's surprisingly promising, actually. And I don't know, you know, unless I'm mistaken, I'm sure I'm seeing a lot more contributions appearing on the Nexus at the moment, which is, you know, it's a really great site, the Nexus. I mean, I only discovered it probably just over a year ago. It just shows how behind the times I am. When I first joined up there, you know, the content seemed to be trickling somewhat. You know, occasionally you'd see a new file appear, because I remember putting prints on there first, you know, the newest file for weeks on end. And then just over the last few months, that rate seems to be increasing. I mean, I don't know if it's just a bit of a brief flux in, you know, a brief increase rather in submissions, but there seem to be more campaigns appearing on the bio boards, people talking about that as well. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of work on combining placeable collections recently, tile sets, tile set tinting, I believe, as well, is appearing. So there's been a lot of good work recently, which, you know, I hope it's a sign of things to come, maybe, that there's people are either returning to the game or they've picked it up recently and having a go at it, because it's, you know, if we had the sort of level of third-party use that Neverwinter 1 had, well, we'll be laughing, because there's an awful lot of potential in this game. But I think maybe because of the bad release it had, it's a lot of, you know, people who, you know, who would be doing stuff right now are, you know, long gone, really. They were put off maybe during the release. But, you know, I think it's quite... If this situation continues, I think we're in for some good times ahead, really.
I have seen a lot. I agree with you. I've seen a lot of releases and things put on the vault. And well, the Nexus, in the new vault even, too, where you wouldn't necessarily, there was a lull where you didn't see any of that going on. There's been that. And also, there has been, like you had said about the BioWare forums, like, the, you know, ever since they cut over the site to that new social site.
Yeah.
It definitely, I've noticed an increase in activity there as well. So, you know, those are all positive indicators, for especially for a game of this, with the length of how long it's been out. And as you pointed out, the poor release that it had due to the bugs and, you know, interesting things like that. So you're right about that.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree with you. You know, in closing, do you have anything else that, you know, we haven't covered that you'd like to share with the audience? Stuff that, you know, comes to mind now that we've been talking a little bit about it?
I think I touched on briefly some of the things you can expect to see in our second part of 3, which is named The Umbral Abyss, which is quite a dark campaign. It has quite a dark edge to it. So it starts in darkness, it comes into the light, and it ends in darkness. so it's an interesting cycle, but it sets things up nicely for our third campaign. But yeah, I mean, some of the features that people can look forward to, I mean, I've mentioned a crafting system, which I'm very proud of. I think people are going to really like it. Hope we can involve it in a way that makes it not a necessity, but a useful thing. I think there's always a risk with crafting of it kind of not really being relevant or required. So we want it to sit somewhere in the middle on there. So we hope that works out. I mentioned the world map. We've also got some systems in to encourage some exploration. So things like, you know, dynamic map pins, which appear when you've gone somewhere, rather than just being there. And things like the names of NPCs as well. What we're going to do mainly with NPCs is we're going to blanket name them as a description of what they look like. Only upon speaking to them will then their name be revealed. So things like that. So you don't just go to the big glowing golden named guy to get your quest. You've got to poke around and look. So play things like that. And then another thing was a journal style as well. What we're going to try and do is turn the journal into a bit of a, almost like a little novel, really.
Okay.
So... at one point in the game, the journal will be written, say written in, you know, inverted commas, by one of your companions, and he will kind of write about what's going on, as in he's telling it the story. So we thought that'd be quite good. So only as well as the story in the game, you can enjoy the story of your adventures as well, summed up in the journal, which will keep on updating and backing it all up for you. So yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. I mean, it's going to take some time to get it finished. We're about almost halfway done. But I really hope people will download this one and as eagerly as they did the last as well.
I have no doubt they will. From what you've described just in this interview here, I mean, alone, plus what I've already reviewed and read myself, I mean, it's utmost quality, been well done, well polished. You know, in my estimation, I can't imagine that this wouldn't get a lot of play, especially with the renewed interest in the Lord of the Rings and, you know, the Middle Earth and all that good stuff. I mean, it's definitely been a big help to that genre, totally.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to follow any of this, we tend to update quite regularly on what's going on. You can follow us. There's a group on Facebook called MERP UK, or there's a MERP UK blog on Blogspot.
And those links will be posted on our show notes as well. So
wonderful.
So we will have both of those listed there. And customary practice, you know, you will get the closing line of the show.
By the end of the year, we should have a new campaign for everyone. So should be available at all good download sites. And thank you very much for inviting me on. Okay, this is Kevin Balmer. Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.